the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
All right, here we go once again. That's right. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It's time to get the week going with Professor Rick Plum, who's here with me. I'm Johnny Dean. We're here from Lucia Capital Group. Going to get things started off right, as opposed to all those other days, I guess, when we don't. No, of course we do. We always get things started off correctly. Now, the main topic for the first segment or two is going to deal with something that you may be doing yourself. And that's not necessarily a good thing. And I'm referring to something known as reverse dollar cost averaging. So, I guess the first question is, do you know what dollar cost averaging is? Maybe you do, or at least you've heard of it. And how, perhaps, it can help you to build your portfolio over the years, although others would argue that it doesn't. Now, if it's good in certain instance, doing the reverse of dollar cost averaging, which is really defined as taking money out of a declining portfolio, that can cause some serious harm to your savings, and we know that. So we're going to tell you what it's all about. We're going to offer some potential solutions coming up here in just a moment with Professor Rick Plum. Now, if you need to get in touch with the Brain Trust right now about anything related to your money, whatever it is, any concern you have from a financial standpoint, you can give us a call right now. Lines are all open. Every line is open right now. 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Brain Trust is standing by for you, as we are every day. You can also email us. You head over to wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link there near the top of the page. So, Professor Plum, certified financial planner, we're ready to talk to you about whatever's on your mind. You can also reach the professor or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group off the air by calling this number, 800-644-1150. Rick's been our Brain Trust advisor for many, many years now, and he's standing by right now to help you out with your money strategies. How do you know that you're on track with your retirement goals? Have you asked yourself that question? How can you be sure that your financial plan is addressing your most vital needs when it comes time to retire? Well, you can ask the Brain Trust at Lucia Capital Group. Once again, their number there, off the air, 800-644-1150. And you can talk to them about any topic that we mention on this program, anything at all. You can give them a call at that number, 800-644-1150. Okay, now I was told we have a couple of calls here, so we're going to get to those before we get to anything else. But just as a preview of what we're going to talk about, Professor Plum. I have heard about dollar cost averaging. You know, I hear about more often than not as something that's generally a good thing. That can be the case, but it's not always the case.
Well, it depends on why you're doing it and how you're about doing it. The whole concept is the fact that you're doing a systematic savings plan, and you're doing that to potentially take advantage of not a down market necessarily, but a volatile market. It doesn't have to be a down market. It could be a flat market, but one that goes up, down, up, down, up, down, up. Up. Hey, what's it been doing lately? It's been going down, going up, going down, going up. And so the idea of dollar cost averaging is investing a systematic amount, a specific amount on a systematic basis over time. When the market goes down, that static dollar amount buys more shares because they're cheaper.
Yep.
When the market goes up, you buy fewer shares. Because of, I mean, you're still putting in $100 a month, $1,000 a month, $10,000 a month, whatever the static number is, when you add it up, you have a lot more shares at the lower price than you do at the higher price. Now, dollar cost averaging does not guarantee a positive result, but it does potentially enhance a return if there's volatility in the market. If there's volatility in the market.
Yeah, I guess I that's the sentence there that's sort of the grabber, because I've said, well, when is there not really volatility in the market? Maybe over the course of a week, 2 weeks, something like that, but over the course of a year or two.
From, you know, what is it, October 2007 to March of 2009, dollar cost averaging didn't help that well because the market for that period of time just went down. It had volatility up and down, but the basic slope was down. And then on the other side, it was basically up. And so it was,
sure.
But over longer periods of time where the market does come back to at least close to where you started from or higher, then it can potentially help you.
Yeah.
And so there's two sides of dollar cost averaging. One is what we do by accident by using our 401k. We're just having money invested every paycheck just, you know, because that's when the money's available and we do it. And so that's a way to look at how do we use volatility to our advantage. The other way to look at dollar cost averaging is I've done my plan, I've done my strategy, I just received a lump sum payout from my pension, I've got this $1 million in cash or X amount of dollars in cash, I've identified that I can afford to have 20% of it, 30%, pick whatever number your strategy calls for, in stocks, do I just invest $200,000 today, $300,000 today, or do I systematically move it into and build up my right. stock position from my cash position over a period of time?
Do you jump into the pool all at once, or you just use the steps and get slowly in, you know? All right, so we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about what the reverse is and give you some tips on how to perhaps deal with markets that are volatile. Okay, 877-PLANNER. I do want to take some calls. We have three lines open still, 877-752-6637. Marie-Jean in Las Vegas is first up. Hi, how can we help you today?
Hello.
Hi, what's up?
Hi, this is Marie-Jean calling. I was wondering, do you guys have information about how to research a company if you had or have stock in that company? My mom is 94 years old. She purchased stock years ago in this company, and it was called Mead West Vacco Corporation. Okay. She was receiving dividends up until May of 2015. The dividend stopped. I researched the company last week and found out that they merged with another company and merged with another company, and I'm really trying to find out where she had purchased 285 shares in right. this Midwest Vacco company. Do you guys know anything about how you research and find out where a company went when you purchase stock, if it just dropped off the face of the earth, or what?
It sounds like she bought it directly from the company. She didn't buy it through...
Employee, exactly.
And so what's known as a transfer agent. And if you go back and find one of the certificates or one of the checks, one of the dividend checks that she received or the statement that she received, somewhere on there it says the transfer agent is American Stock Transfer Company, whatever the case may be, and get a hold of that transfer company to find out what happened to that stock. It could be that it just is now trading under a different ticker, and you just somehow there was some paperwork that was missed. I don't know how that would be, but find out who the transfer agent was. And luckily, it was only a year or so ago. Find out the transfer agent.
You know, I have that. The transfer agent was Wells Fargo. It changed over to ACCO Brands, and Wells Fargo came in. They were the owner services. I called them. They said it transferred then after they got it over to another company, and Rock 10, which is in Tennessee, and then it transferred over to West Rock. Well, West Rock, it looks like just dropped off the face of the earth. I have no more information from that.
Then go back to where the last place you knew it was and, you know, figure out where that is and then try to make the leap to the next one. If they don't, there is, you know, this is where the Securities Investor Protection Corporation comes in, SIPC, because your shares didn't just evaporate. They may be stuck in a limbo somewhere between transfer agent A and transfer agent B. But go back to where it was the last time you knew about it. And if they say it went to this new company and this new company doesn't exist anymore, well, then we go back to the company that transferred and say, okay, where did you send it? Because that company doesn't exist. And if that company doesn't exist, talk to you probably need to get a hold of somebody in that state with the Securities Commission there. But go back to the last known place and keep transferring it and just raise it ruckus.
Yeah, they didn't actually, I mean,
they didn't get
like
rid
they
of it.
Fell off and they threw it away with, you know, the old.
This doesn't matter anymore.
Right,
we'll just throw it away.
We don't need this stuff. So, Marie-Jean, that's your best bet. We're going to take a break in a second. If you have any more questions, hold on. We can talk to you a little bit off the air. Occasionally we get questions like this. Now, you mentioned the Securities Investor Protection Corp or whatever it's called, SIPC. Those are the people that actually...
If a company screws up and erases your shares or, you know, does something, you know, they don't guarantee the share value because the share value goes up or down based on the market. But they do, you know, watch out for people, you know, stealing, screwing up the actual number of shares you own.
Yeah.
From an accounting issue, from a fraud issue, from something of that nature.
Now, even if for some reason the company, you know, did go bankrupt and the stock was worthless.
But the shares have to be somewhere.
The shares still have to be around. So you have to be able to at least prove in order to take a loss or whatever.
Well, the shares aren't...
That you own the shares, that you have the shares.
Right. And so just keep following the train. Okay, it went from stop A to stop B. And we know it made it to stop B. Now let's go...
It's, Now, it's not, I mean, it's not quite like, you know, transferring money from one bank to another, and eventually some bank says, well, we don't know where your money is, and all of a sudden you got none, right?
Well, yeah, what happens in that? If I'm transferring money from Wells Fargo to Bank of America, Wells Fargo says, we transferred on, you know, January 3rd. Mm-hmm. It's now, you know, X date, and it hasn't shown up. Bank of America says, well, we don't have any idea. It's got to be somewhere, so go after both of those banks and say, okay, Wells Fargo's the last one that had it. Where did you send it? Give me an account number. Give me a routing number. Give me everything right. You can. And then go to, you know, if they said Bank of America, here's the receipt from Bank of America that we received electronically.
Over there.
Okay, here's what's going on. Somebody's going to have to show it up.
They'll say, oh, man, it was totally on the dresser. And I swear when I left and I came back and I think somebody, the maid might have moved it or something.
Yeah, into their pocket? That can't happen.
I don't know. You know, I mean, we took it off to dust and I don't know if anybody put it back, man.
It fell back behind the dresser. Just look behind the dresser.
But it's there. Marie-Jean, don't worry about it. All right, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're coming right back. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome back to the program. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Got some lines open for you right now. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. You got a money question, you ask us right here in person, live on the show. We'll talk to you about anything that's on your mind. 877-752-6637. And don't forget, every Tuesday afternoon, just keep track of what day it is, and you'll know at Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern, you've got right there at WealthEd.com, the Social Security Show, featuring me, Johnny Dean, and this guy, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you for a half hour or so of just intensive Social Security stuff. Laws, rules, strategies, emails, I mean, there's a lot there. And there's a lot there because people have a lot of questions on this. So join us. It's only at WealthEd.com, 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern, only on Tuesday afternoons and only at WealthEd.com. The Social Security Show. All right, 877-PLANNER, our number. WealthEd.com, if you want to email us. We'll get to some of those emails a little bit later on this hour and next hour as well. I want to continue, though, just a little bit here on this idea of dollar cost averaging. One of the main examples that we see all the time of dollar cost averaging, Professor Plum, the normal kind, is somebody just putting money every month or whatever it is into their 401k out of their paychecks or every two
right,
weeks.
And that's where... And that's where we're looking at volatility, and we're trying to find a way to hopefully, you know, try to find some way to take advantage of it, if possible. And as I mentioned earlier, there's no guarantee that dollar cost averaging will create a positive result, but it tends to help over just a straight buy and hold sometimes. And it helps our stomach as much as anything else when the market's going down. And what we've seen over the last couple of months, couple of weeks, is like, this is good time to be dollar cost averaging, to be saving into our 401ks, to be saving on a systematic basis, because every time the market goes down, we buy in at a lower price. And the lower it goes, the more shares we buy. We just need it to come back a little bit, hopefully. So far in history, it's always come back. We'll see if this one repeats. But that's where dollar cost averaging really lends a hand, at least potentially. Now, where we have issues with it from time to time is, like I said before, where we have a lump sum to invest. We've identified that we want to put in a fairly large portion on a buy and hold type issue. We have a long-term time horizon. We know we can potentially afford to put X amount of dollars into the stock market, a diversified portfolio. Do we put it all in at once, or do we stage it in over a period of time?
Yeah, and in fact, I want to bring this up since you're talking about it. Michael Kitsis, who we quote from time to time on this program, is saying the same kind of thing that you're saying, where he says, from a return-enhancing perspective, dollar cost averaging continues to be a losing proposition.
But he's talking about the lump sum idea, not the ongoing, you know, your paycheck type idea.
Well, he's talking about as opposed to if you already have a lump sum, is right. What he's saying, rather than taking chunks off of it. He says it only leads to better returns when markets decline. Yet, ironically, if markets are known in advance to decline, I don't know how you'd know that, it would be better to wait to invest altogether and still not dollar cost average. And in situations of uncertainty, given that return are positive more often than negative, it will generally be a losing bet to keep any money on the sidelines rather than just invest it all as soon as possible.
Statistically speaking, that's true. And, you know, that's taking 100% of the emotion out of it. The markets move higher more often than they move lower. Now, the problem is when they do move lower, they move lower quicker than they move higher.
Yeah.
It takes longer for it to go up than it does for it to go down. And so what's happening is if you have this lump sum to invest, and you want to put it into the market, or you've identified that you can afford to put it in the market. Should you put it all in up front, or should you stage it in over on a dollar cost averaging aspect? Now, there's a couple problems with staging it in. First off, over what time frame are you going to do it? Over the next 6 months, next 12 months, the next 18 months, the next 3 years, what are you going to do? So that's one issue, because 6 months, if you had started this a year ago, the first 6 months weren't all that good.
Nope. You know?
And the last 6 months haven't been all that good. So it's all about your, it's more, to me, it's more about your stomach. If you've got the time horizon availability, 15, 20 years before you need the money, it can go in, and it probably won't make much of a difference. Now, Murphy's Law says no matter when you put the lump sum in, it's going to go down right after that. And so if you are one of these people that Murphy's Law affects heavily, you may want to stage it in. But more from a risk management standpoint, because we're more concerned, especially when we have existing capital, we're more concerned with losing it. The anxiety that we get for losing money is not as much, or is more than the joy we get for making money going on the upside.
And again, just continuing on with what I was, he happens to mention that again, Michael Kitsis says, we experience more negative pain around losses than we do positive effect from comparable gains. This is significant in the context of dollar cost averaging, as it means that while most of the time we may give up a little upside by averaging into an investment, if we can avoid a significant loss with exponentially more pain, it may still be worthwhile, even if it happens infrequently. More generally, this means dollar cost averaging can have a positive utility when accounting for the limited joy of gains and the significant pain of losses, even if the total returns are likely to be reduced in the long run.
So when you're dealing with a lump sum that you're going to put into the market, the reason to dollar cost average is not a statistical mathematical one in the long run. It's your stomach. It's your anxiety factor. And knowing who you are, if you're one of those individuals who probably would sell if the market goes down, then you want to dollar cost average the lump sum into the market. If you're going to put it in and not look at it for 15 or 20 years, you're probably better off just putting it all in up front and ignoring it for 15 years.
Yeah, there are people who get this big bonus, or they have, you know, an inheritance or whatever, and they say, look at this, man, I got $50,000. You know what? I'd like to turn this into $100,000 over the next 15 years. I don't know, just to make up a number. So they take it and they throw it all into the market, and within they look at it 3 months later or whatever, 6 months later, and they come back, instead of $50,000,
it's 45.
It's 40. I don't know, whatever it is, but it's something less than that.
Which it could be.
You think, I just lost for doing nothing. I just lost $3,000 or $5,000. Doesn't matter. The point is, you lost money in it. And so for that kind of person, it would have been better to keep that money safe and little by little, perhaps, go into the market over, you know, a period of time, and while the initial shares would have certainly lost some money, at the same time, you're buying them more cheaply as the market goes down.
But over that 15-year period of time, did it go down right after the person put it in?
Yes.
Okay, but the other side of it is, sometimes it goes down. I've seen the Murphy's Law, you know, disciples, they'll decide to dollar cost average over the next year. And the next year, the market goes straight up.
And they say, but
once they get all the money in,
then it goes down.
So if you're going to be the second guesser, if you're going to be the individual who is very worried about that downside movement, which is possible, obviously, it's hard to overcome the emotional factors in this.
It is. And the problem with the emotional side of it, Professor Plum, is this, that even if it happened the way you did, you wrote it all the way up, you dollar cost average, you took advantage of, you did it all the way up, you got all your money in, and then all of a sudden it goes down by 20% over the next 18 months. You know, your attitude should be, well, who cares anyway? Because this is money. If it's in the market, it's money I'm not going to touch for 15 years anyway.
Right. And so using dollar cost averaging depends on what you're trying to accomplish and who you are. A lot of people can handle it. They just put it in and say, you know what, I'm not going to look at it for 15 years. But other people, they're going to second guess themselves no matter what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be able to control us.
Yes.
We are still the biggest detriment to our overall investment portfolio.
We are, but if you stick to a plan like we talk about, then you'll at least know that the plan is not emotional. The plan is much more rational, especially if it's a good plan, one that was put together during periods of rationality. Okay, so now we talk about dollar cost averaging. What about the reverse of that? You know, there are many people who advocate that you should do this. Take money out of a declining portfolio. Why? I don't know. But we'll tell you about this, what this means. Also, take your calls. Any question you have, doesn't matter. Lines are open, 877-PLANNER. We're coming back with more. We got some lines open for you. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637.
I need $1, $1, $1, that's what 877-752-6637.
We'll get your calls in just a couple of moments here. One more thing, though, very quickly before we get to the calls on dollar cost averaging. Something that's important. We'll get to the reverse of this, too. I promise we'll get to that. I want to take a couple of calls. When you dollar cost average into whatever it is you have, Professor Plum.
Yes.
You don't want to do this into something that's like guaranteed, like a, you know, a CD, because there's...
Usually not. You want to take advantage of the volatility.
Right. So if you're carving off a piece of your portfolio, okay, you've been diligently saving for a while, and you've been putting money in, you're doing this into your 401k call, and then you want to take a piece of that 401k, move it into something safe, okay? Chop off a piece and put it into, you know, some kind of fun money market CD. It's better to do that and continue to go into the volatile areas rather than stop funding the volatile and put it and then dollar cost average into something safe.
Assuming we have the time horizon to take advantage of that volatility. Time horizon is key here. If the money that I'm saving today, you know, is going to be used in a year, 2 years, 3 years for a down payment, for a new car, for whatever the case may be, that's too short of a time horizon to take advantage of, or at least hopefully take advantage of volatility. It could still be negative at that period of time, so you could actually lose money. So you wouldn't want to be playing with the market over a short period of time. But assuming that the money is not going to be needed. Now, even a 62-year-old who's going to retire at 65, they can dollar cost average into the more aggressive side of their 401k, because not all the money in their 401k is going to be used the first year they retire. So presumably they're going to live a little while, and some of the money needs to be sent ahead for that longer time horizon. So there is a longer time horizon there. But if we're going to use all the money in the next 2-3 years, nope, even though we're not taking advantage of the volatility, we're trying to avoid the volatility in that respect. So
any
it's all
volatility
about time horizon.
At all. Exactly. So there's that. Okay, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. I want to take a few calls. We had a couple of folks drop off, so give us a call back. So we still have two lines open. Let's move over then next to James in Santa Rosa, California. Hi, James.
Hi, how you guys doing today?
Good. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I've never had you guys talk much about preferred stock.
Okay. What do you want to know?
I'm heavily invested in stock, and over the past couple of years, my guy and myself have been going more into bonds, and now he's suggesting preferred stock as not everything, but just a little something in the IRA. He said something to juice it up a little bit. And, I think he's doing this because I'm just having aversion against annuities. He's just trying to, keep the income flow going. And I've never heard you guys mention that too much. Are you for or against in today's environment? I'm 64 years old. I've talked to you guys before. I live a long time. I have no relatives. So when I die, I expect to write that last check to the undertaker and die at the same time. So.
Yeah, just got to know when that date's going to be to make sure that check bounces, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll say here, deposit this next Wednesday. I'm dying on Tuesday.
Oh, golly. As far as preferred stocks, moving out of bonds today into preferred stocks, the reason they're doing that is because they're trying to get a higher yield. But preferred stocks act very similar to long-term, very long-term bonds. And so, yes, in the short run, and if we continue to have low interest rates, the preferred stocks will outperform the bonds in that same type of category. But if we have an increasing interest rate environment, preferred stock values, the underlying security, is going to go down in price because the payment is the same. And so where it can be used in a portfolio, it's not real. I mean, it is an alternative to a bond. It's just that if interest rates go up, they're not good alternatives to bonds. And so from a area where we're going to live off the income, I'm not a big fan of using preferred stocks for the income. I like using dividends, whether they're from preferred or common stocks, to reinvest. There is volatility within the underlying security. It'll go up and down based on people's perception of the market, even if the market does, interest rates, people's perception of interest rates doesn't even have to be a real interest rate environment. It can be the perception that interest rates are going to go up and the stock goes way down. And so if we're worried about the risk in a bond, we should be very worried about the risk in a preferred stock. So used correctly, they as a small piece of a pie that's risk managed to be able to use that income to basically revert to dollar cost average into other areas, to use that income to help buy into more, use that volatility to our advantage, I don't have a problem with the preferred stocks. I don't like the idea of using preferred stocks in lieu of bonds to create an income that I'm going to be spending. You said you had an aversion to annuities. What do you want an annuity to do or not do for you?
Well, my aversion is basically, there have been so many talks about the high fees and all that. I've sort of looked into it. For somebody in my age bracket, it looks like just an immediate annuity. Give them a couple $100,000, and that would be the simplest way to go. I don't know. I keep hearing bad things about annuities and the cost and all that. But I suppose if I got a lifetime annuity, quit when I died, so I don't have to worry about a survivor event benefit or anything like that. That might not be bad deal.
And to be honest, I'm not a big fan of an immediate annuity for you. They are very simple. They're straightforward. You give them a couple $100,000, you get an income. And if anybody was a candidate for one, you would be one for a candidate because you don't care what happens to the money after you're gone. You just want to make sure you have an income while you're alive. I just don't like immediate annuities today, given today's interest rate environment. 10 years from now, given the fact that you're older at that point, the immediate annuity may make more sense. But right now, I'm not a big fan of the immediate annuities. I'm not sure. I wasn't saying an annuity is appropriate for you, but it's just a matter of there's lots of different annuities, and they do make reasonable bond alternatives for a deferred period of time, not for one that creates income. I'm not looking for an income annuity, but then I wouldn't use the preferred stocks for income anyway. But if you're looking for something that has a guarantee of principal or a near guarantee of principal or some kind of buffer on the downside that protects at least some movement lower, and you're looking for an interest rate that is similar to or potentially better than what you can get on bonds of 5, 6, 7 year natures, the fixed annuity or the structured capital type annuities make a lot of sense. And the one thing that you kept coming back to was you hate the fees. Well, there are no fees in the products that I was just talking about. Variable annuity, yeah, they have fees, but that's not the whole thing. So there are things you can do, maybe, I don't know your plan. So I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater on this, and I would look at what am I trying to accomplish? Go back to my strategy, what is the use of the money, and if an annuity fits, use an annuity. I'm not saying it does.
Okay, all right. Well, I was just sort of curious. I think what he's trying to do is just juice up the
but he also took the risk up a little bit too.
I'm too heavily in stocks. I've been too heavily in stocks for years. All the stocks I have are pretty much, like you said, dividend paying stocks.
Right.
I'm old school.
Nothing wrong with that. Let's just figure out a way to make some, because the only person you care about right now from a financial standpoint is you. Let's give you the income that you want so you can go do the things you enjoy doing, that you don't have to worry about what happened in the market yesterday and whether or not you can continue doing what you want to do.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
All right, James, hang on. If you want some more information on some of this stuff that Rick talked about, because we've talked occasionally about some of this, these things. And what's happening, Professor Plum, is that because of interest rates are so low, we don't have as many tools. The tools that we've been using in the past aren't necessarily as effective, mainly because of...
Well, bonds don't pay anything.
Yeah.
Preferred stocks CDs still pay a little bit higher than bonds, but they've got quite a bit of risk if interest rates go up. But they've also got some stock market risk.
Yeah. All right. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Let's get started anyway with Rick in Pompano Beach, Florida. Hi, Rick. How can we help you today?
Hi, guys. I have bucket number one filled. Don't need it for 2 years. Got it filled with 5 years. I have it sitting in a money market fund with a brokerage company. I have the ability to... put a lot of it into brokered CDs, which would give me a little more interest versus what I'm getting now. Would that be a good thing? Would you explain the advantages and disadvantages of brokered CDs, since I can't roll it over to ones in a bank? And I noticed that the majority of them are FDIC insured. Thank you.
Well, don't hang up yet, but brokered CDs are CDs that are you know, offered throughout the United States that you buy through your brokerage company, and they sometimes pay a better yield and sometimes they don't. So they can't. It's just a matter of return. Now, I would stick with any of them that are that have FDIC insurance at the CD level. It's just a matter of the CDs. Now, there may be better investments out there besides CDs too. If you've got a 5-year time horizon for the money, even a 3-year time horizon. So if it's a bucket number one, you're going to be spending it down over 5 years. Some of the money you're not going to touch for 3, 4, 5 years. That can be in a longer CD, or in that case, a fixed annuity may make sense, because from what I've seen of the fixed annuities with the 3, 4, 5 year surrender charges, they still pay a little bit, not a huge amount, a little bit more than what a CD will pay.
But yeah, do you have the same sort of guarantees based on the insurance company?
Insurance company guarantee, not FDIC.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, there's that.
And there's no fees.
Right. Okay. I tell you what. Hey, Rick, I got to take a break, but if you want to hang on, we can talk to you more about this on the other side. That was just sort of a nominal explanation of it. If you need some more. In fact, I think we will. Let's just talk a little bit more about that when we come back. So hold on, Rick, if you can. If you have some more questions, we'll be happy to answer those as well. And looks like three lines open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Blum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Another hour is coming up in the program in most cities around the country, so stick around for that. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Blum, talking to you about your money. 877-PLANNER, the number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. All right, now we're going to go back to Rick in Pompano Beach, Florida. Rick, you still with us?
Still there, guys.
Okay, thank you for hanging on. I wanted to make sure that Professor Blum explains it. If you have some more questions, we'll get to those as well.
Now, when you're looking at brokered CDs, you do want to make sure that the underlying bank is sound. You do want to make sure that there's FDIC insurance. And you asked a little bit about the costs and the fees. And sometimes you can buy them and there are no fees, and the intermediary, the broker, is being paid out of a spread rate between what they're selling it to you for and what they can buy it for, so there's no fee. Sometimes they will charge a ticket charge, like buying a stock, $10, $15, $20, a flat fee. And a couple times I've seen them in fee-based accounts where they charge a fee. This becomes part of the asset management that you're being charged a fee on. That I don't like so much, because you're really not earning very much on the CD to begin with, and to pay an ongoing annual fee takes away from it. So you really want to focus on the APY, the annual percentage yield, on what's going on, to be able to compare it with equal or equal ones outside of the brokered area. But there's a lot of times where local banks and credit unions may not be offering attractive rates, but going through a national association or a national availability of CDs, you may be able to find a better rate. So you have to look at, am I buying it for $10,000? You know, because that's what's going to, is it costing me more than $10,000 to buy it because of ticket charges or something else? What am I actually going to be earning on what it costs me? Not just the money to buy it, but any other fees associated. What am I actually earning to make sure that I'm getting what I thought I was going to get?
Okay, gotcha.
But in many cases, a fixed annuity can work as well. There are shorter term fixed annuities. I was looking at one with a 3-year surrender charge. Unfortunately, they did just drop their rates 0.1% from where they were, because interest rates have gone back down again. But they're still right in line with what the banks are offering, or a little bit more from what I've seen, what the banks were offering. Not a lot. I mean, we're talking the difference between like 1.617 versus 1.8, 1.85. I mean, it's not going to set the world on fire. You do not have FDIC insurance with a fixed annuity. You have the insurance company standing behind the guarantee. So how much you feel that's worth is up to you.
Gotcha. All right, guys, once again, thank you for your time.
Okay, Rick, if you want to hold on, we can get you some more information on this stuff, and it's something to consider. I thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Good questions. What we're talking about in Rick's case, because he was talking about bucket number one.
He was talking about bucket number one, and so he's looking maybe to ladder out some CDs.
Right, and what the idea here is to sort of bucketize bucket one, if you want to look at it that way.
Well, let's say I needed $10,000 a year to spend, and so I would keep $10,000 in cash for the next year, because I need to spend it over the next year. I'd have a CD, maybe I have a CD for $10,000 coming due 1 year from today, and that's going to earn me very little, and then another one coming due in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years down the line. So each year at the beginning of the year or beginning of the time period, I have a CD coming due for the amount of money that I want to spend for that period of time. And I would be able to get that plus whatever interest it earned over that period of time. You can do this. So that's one way to do it. Unfortunately, CDs, as most people know, are just not paying a whole lot. And it's for that first year or two, you're probably better off with an online bank if you can get one for your account. It's not as easy to do with IRAs because they're paying, online accounts are paying more than what 6 months, 8 months, 9 months CDs are paying.
But how much of a difference could there make, really?
Until you get into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's not making a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you're talking about $10,000 a year or $12,000 or whatever it is, you know, you'll take your $1,000 a month, your $33,000, whatever it is a month.
I mean, the difference between on $100,000, the difference between keeping it at the local bank at 0.5% and an online bank for 1% is $500.
Yeah. So
is it worth $500 to have it somewhere else?
Yeah. And for some people, it may be.
Now,
what you're talking about, though, is, you know, when we say we need 7 years of safe money or so,
that's our bucket number one for most people.
In bucket number one, it doesn't make sense for some people to say, well, look, I could put, you know, I could have a 5-year CD and I could ladder these things out and who knows where interest rates are going to be. But there are others who might say, you know, since I don't really need to touch this money for, say, 5 years, a chunk of this money, maybe I could put it to work in a safe yet not quite as safe, perhaps, as a CD. Some kind of instrument such as the annuity, the fixed annuity that you were talking about.
Well, that's where the fixed annuity comes in for the person that wants the guarantee of principal. You also want to know the rate of return in advance. I want to know exactly what I'm getting for the next 5 years. No, I don't want any ifs, ands, or buts about this. I want to know what I want. And they'll tell you right up front, for the next 5 years, you're going to get X percent, just like a CD would do. There is a surrender charge, so make sure that the surrender charge does not extend past the guarantee rate period. But, you know, as long as you're doing it correctly, you can look at the rates, compare it, and say, these are guaranteed, these are guaranteed. You know, just different guaranteeing bodies. The raises are, I like this rate better than that rate, so we can deal with it in that area. But if you do have a 5, 6, 7, 8 year period of time, and you want that guarantee, but you want maybe a little bit better rate of return than the CDs are giving you, that even a fixed annuity is giving you, there is a potential, although the cap rates are not very attractive right now, to use an index annuity. And this is where index annuities, what they were designed for. They were designed for 5 to 8, 9 year periods of time where you don't need an income from the asset, but you also don't want to lose any principal. They have, for the most part, they have a guarantee of principal. There are some that are horrible and they don't even give you back your principal after 5, 6, 7 years. So make sure you have a guarantee of principal, that the surrender charge goes away at the end of the period of time. And the idea is that you can potentially earn a little bit better rate of return by linking your interest rate to the performance of a market index. And so it is still an interest rate. You are not in the investment world. You are not in an investment. You are in a fixed annuity. It's just that you don't know the interest rate that you're going to be paid until the end of the period of time, whether it's a 1-year, 3-year, 5-year segment. So you have to look at what the index that you've tied it to does over that period of time. Now, you're not going to get, if the market goes up 30% like it did in 2013, you're not going to earn 30%. You're going to earn some percentage of that, probably in the 30 to 40 to 50% range, or have a cap rate. There's some limiting factor.
Sure.
Right now, the cap rates are in the 4s and 5s.
Because otherwise, how can they make guarantees on the downside if they don't have some limit on the upside potential? That's how that works.
But if my 5-year rate is about 2, 2.5% on a CD, if I think that over the next 5 years, 6 years, the market's going to be up 4 or 5 times out of 7, and you know, so maybe I get 1 or 2 years of zero interest rate. You don't ever lose because of a market rate. You just get no interest. That my average return is going to be 3, 3.5%. I like the potential for 3.5 more than I like the certainty of 2.
But
that's your call.
Yeah, and in the case of bucket number one, you got to be careful. You don't want to take the risk out too far because that's the whole idea of a bucket one.
Definitely don't want to take the surrender charge out too far.
No, you do not. Okay, well, we're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their off-air number, 800-644-1150. There it is. We're coming right back with more Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Incorporated, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.